What's going on? Welcome to another episode of Learning with Leslie. This is episode number 415. And yes, as you can tell, it is a little different. There's no fancy intro or anything of that sort because I got some stuff that I want to get to. About a month and a half ago, I had the tremendous privilege and the opportunity to head on over to Mountain View, California to go to Google to be a part of a panel conversation for Black History Month on the topic of the benefits of the spotlight for people of color. Now, it was me and two other amazing entrepreneurs that you're going to get to meet as a part of this panel conversation. And we just had a great time. It was an amazing experience to be at Google. And I finally got the recording so I can share it here with you. So I'm going to go ahead and share that with you here. A special thank you to Dale Alsop. He's a VP at Google. He is the director of the Ads Responsibility Office. And he's the one that put this together. He's the one that invited me to be a part of it, and I appreciate you. That's my brother from another mother, and I'm just excited that you made this a possibility for me. So I'm going to share that in a second. Before I do that, of course, I have to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by Ecamm Live, literally brought to you by Ecamm Live. I would not be able to do the things that I'm doing here and producing this podcast episode without having to edit after the fact. Everything you see happens because I am using Ecamm Live, and at the click of a button, I could change the screen, I could bring stuff on the screen, I could change cameras, I could do all kinds of stuff because Ecamm Live makes it not just possible, it makes it easy. So if you want to check it out and take your video production to the next level without having to hire a very expensive video editor or to learn how to do video editing yourself, check them out at ecamm.com/Leslie, and that's going to save you 15% off your first payment. All right, so on that note, let's head on over and enjoy the episode, the panel conversation. There's not going to be an outro at the end or anything of that sort, but there's going to be a lot of value. So check it out.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world today. We are excited you are here to join us for this awesome panel. My name is Sylvanus, and I'm a PM. I lead our core creative and formats on search. And I'm super excited to introduce this panel today, which is part of the K&I Black History Month. It's called The Benefits of the Spotlight, How Brand Visibility Can Shape the Next Wave of Successful BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, People of Color, Ventures. Today, you will hear from three innovative and mission-driven businesses. You will hear about their motivations for starting their businesses, hear about their impact on their customers, and their experience using Google products, including ads, right? So pay attention. These are Google customers, too. I want to give a shout-out to Dale, who is sitting over here. He was instrumental in bringing this whole panel together. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce the panel. First, I'd like to start out by mentioning we have Dara Cook. She's CEO and co-founder of Expect Fitness. She founded a fitness platform for pregnant women with a mission to have healthier moms and babies. Then we have Leslie Samuel, founder of Interactive Biology and a YouTube creator. Leslie is sharing his passion and enthusiasm to make biology fun and accessible for students all over the world. And then we also have Kareen Cook, co-owner and CMO of NatureAid, a health food company with products in Costco, Target, Amazon, and beyond, with a focus on bringing healthy products to underserved communities. Now, our panel will be hosted by none other than Michael Levinson, who is VP and GM of social ads, local, and vertical ads. So let's please give a warm welcome to our panel. Thank you.
You have to be aware of the moment. This was my moment where the five is showing and I got two aces. I got to split the aces. I got to go for it. This is the moment. This is where you win it all or lose it all.
My name is Detavio Samuels, and welcome to The Black Print, where I sit with the innovators, disruptors, hey! like change makers. My guests open up about every step of their journey and share lessons learned along the way to provide creators, entrepreneurs, and executives with a tangible blueprint for navigating to the top of their industry. This is The Black Print.
What if we told you that one of the most exciting things on the internet is a biology class? Yup, and this man is behind it. Meet Leslie Samuel, biology teacher, entrepreneur, creator, and one of our most interesting people on the internet. Today, we're going to find out how Leslie's love for science took him from a tiny Caribbean island to 5 million people around the world.
I'm Dara Cook. I founded Expect because women in America today are more likely to die of pregnancy complications than our grandmothers were over 50 years ago. Maternal fitness is proven to reduce the risk of everything from premature births to postpartum depression by double-digit percentages. It is arguably our most cost-effective tool to save and improve lives. And that's why I left my 20-year career at MTV, where I learned how to captivate millions, to move people in another way with Expect. Fitness optimized for pregnancy and postnatal, and the only platform where every workout is approved by OBGYNs. We make fitness addictive with music video style production and unparalleled diversity of race, gender, and body type.
Let's go. Yeah. All right. You go. All right. I think we are ready to go. I'm Michael, for those of you who don't know me, and I was honored to be asked by Dale to moderate this panel today. We're going to have a great discussion. Let's start with a quick icebreaker. Tell us just a little bit about you personally and include a fun fact for the crowd. We got some good fun facts in this group. Leslie, do you want to start?
All right, sure. So my name is Leslie Samuel. I am originally from the beautiful Caribbean island of St. Martin. And at the age of 17, I moved to the U.S. to study. I was a terrible student, but at one point, I took a physiology class that just blew my mind and got me so excited about biology and got me into the field of biology. And we'll talk a little more about that. But a fun fact about me is that I'm someone that's kind of, I go crazy for streaks. So I got myself an Apple Watch, and the first time I worked out with it, it celebrated with me, and I got excited. So I said, I'm going to do it again the next day and the next day, and today I'm on day 1,571 of exercising for a minimum of 30 minutes each and every day. My friends called me a streaker. That's what I do.
Sickness and health, fever.
There you go.
Wow, I'm impressed. Dara, how about you?
Well, you could be a model for Expect then.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah, with that type of streak. Dara Cook, CEO and founder of Expect. Fun fact about me is that I was a member of Destiny's Child. No, seriously. Before I went into maternal health, I worked at MTV for many years, and that's the common trajectory. You start at MTV and then you go to maternal health, right? That's just how you do it. But when I was at MTV, that's where I learned how to create content and launch businesses. So when I was there, I was a producer on TRL, and this picture of Beyonce, me and Kelly, that's from the MTV photo booth in the old TRL studio. And I was head creative of the MTV Video Music Awards for many years. Some of those, the big years with Taylor Swift and Beyonce and Miley and Robin Thicke, if you remember that one. And I was brand manager of Nick Cannon's Wild and Out and was also on the business development side where we expanded out and really extracted more value from our franchises and launched the podcast business and the touring business at MTV. So now I'm in maternal fitness.
All right. Kareem.
So my name is Kareem Cook. I am the owner of a company called NatureAid. I have
my professional career, I've been passionate about health disparities that exist in underserved communities. Originally started a healthy vending machine company with my business partner, Claude Tellis, in Los Angeles. Within 2 years, we were able to play a major role in getting the law changed, banning junk food in all the schools, and also we were awarded the contract for all the public and high schools and middle schools in Los Angeles, as well as all the YMCAs. Currently, I own a company called NatureAid. We sell primarily plant-based products, and you know, our whole thing is getting people who don't have access to these types of foods healthy. I personally didn't think that my mom in the Bronx, where I grew up, should have to get on a bus and a train to get to a Whole Foods. She should be able to go downstairs and have the same access to quality products. We're distributed in Costco, as in the intro, Target, and a few other places, Amazon. Just got distribution in Dubai, just got back. So I'm on my second consecutive day of working out.
There we go.
And a fun fact about me is I was once a choreographer for Michael Jackson.
All right, so Kareem pulled that description in the preparation call, which is not going to suffice. Give us a short version of the of that MJ fun fact.
It's a crazy story about Providence, but I quit my job on a Friday, and on Sunday I got a call from Debbie Allen, who had heard out in my fraternity. If you saw the Super Bowl and you saw Usher and you saw a couple of Kappas behind him, I basically got hired to choreograph a routine for Michael Jackson, where he wanted to kind of incorporate stepping and stuff into it, and some hip-hop dance. And I was brought to New York. Got the random call on Sunday. I had to quit my job Friday. Asked if I could be in New York by Monday. And the rest was history.
That is a good story. Cool. So we heard a bit about your business, Leslie and Dora. Let's just hear a little bit more about what you're doing now.
Yeah.
In terms of your business.
So I mentioned before that I was a terrible student. But then I took this class, and it got me so excited about biology. And it got me so excited that I decided I'm going on for a master's in neurobiology, because that's the part that I was so interested in. And then I'm going to get a PhD, and I'm going to teach what that professor is teaching. So I did the master's and realized that I hated research. And evidently, when you're doing a PhD, you need to do some research. So I gave up on that dream and said, you know what, I'm going to teach at a high school. But I was still passionate about this stuff. The first time I heard about the neuron, I was like, this is amazing. I want to tell everybody about the neuron. I didn't have the PhD, but I figured I don't need a PhD to teach people. I started interactive biology, where my first videos was, what is a neuron, and all this stuff. And the idea is, whenever I tell people that I study biology, usually the response that I get is like, oh, that thing that I hated when I was in high school. I want to change that. And I think you can change that by making biology fun. So I create videos about biology. Sometimes I create biology hip hop, biology reggae, about you know, the process of mitosis. Anything that I can do to make biology interactive, to make it engaging, and to make it fun. That's what I do with interactive biology.
All right. And Dra, tell us a little bit more about Expect.
Mitosis, I haven't heard that in a while.
I have a reggae song for you if you need to.
Okay, yes. Expect is a pre- and postnatal fitness platform, and we are the only pre- and postnatal fitness platform where every workout is approved by OBGYNs. And so much of what we do is about why we're doing it. So to take a step back, the U.S. is in a maternal health emergency. And for decades, the maternal mortality rate and the rate of complications in pregnancy has been rising steadily. And it's been rising precipitously in the past few years. It's so bad now that the infant mortality rate is rising for the first time in 20 years. And our ability to impact that is limited. We don't have enough OBGYNs and nurses in America. The labor supply is too tight to support the births that we have here. But there is one thing that we can do, and that is that's pre- and postnatal fitness. So one of the things that I saw, I was pre-pandemic, I was the member of five different gems, and I saw the problem and the promise. I was seeing that in every gym, whether it was the local rec center in Harlem that was virtually free all the way up to Equinox, I was paying a few hundred dollars a month, is that there were pregnant women trying to work out in group fitness classes and they were being underserved. They were given ad hoc modifications. And then at the same time, I saw the promise. My sister had her first child in what is considered a geriatric pregnancy. It's a terrible phrase, but that's what they call it. And as a result, her risk factors were higher. And her doctor suggested she work out in pregnancy. And she did. And her labor was so smooth. The OBGYN who delivered my niece was in the room for only 15 minutes. And she said to my sister, "You must have worked out. I've noticed that women who work out have labors like this." And when I got home, I saw that the research really bears that out. And this is the reason now why all of the world's leading health organizations recommend that if you're pregnant, that you need to exercise. I mean, of course, you have to check in with your doctor. So there was really no one in this space. And I realized that I could take everything I had learned about creating compelling content that gets millions of people watching, and what I learned at MTV about launching and starting businesses, and bring that into this space.
Awesome. Let's shift gears. So it is Black History Month. This discussion is framed specifically around brand building for Black founders. What role has your cultural identity community played in your business? Like, is this something you've leaned into? How? Maybe Kareem, start.
Yeah, so, you know, our whole, so what we chose to focus on was diabetes, and it was personal to me, and in the African-American community, we over-index in diabetes. And so, according to the American Diabetes Association, if you lose 10% of your body weight, you have a 65% chance of going from pre-diabetic to healthy, and there are 100 million people who are pre-diabetic.
10%.
And so we were like, well, let's just focus on that. Let's see if we could get people to, at first we thought maybe a blood glucose pill or some sort of magic pill. And then we realized we had two friends who had gone from type 2 diabetes to healthy by just going vegan. Now, that's a taboo word in the Black community. And so, you know, so it'd be like trying to sell, like, you know, blocks of cement. And so we were like, well, look, let's sell balance. You know, let's educate folks on what they could do so that if you're going to do the bacon cheeseburger at night, then maybe a plant-based smoothie in the morning or during the day with a little bit, maybe, you know, intermittent fasting and some fitness. And so that was what we did. And so that message was very palatable, and we were able to be successful doing that. And we also ended up selling into the places where they are, right? And that was key because, for instance, I go to this Natural Products Expo every year, and there's 100 million people there, and 30 companies that look like us selling types of products, right? 100,000 people there, right? We go to the Essence Festival, where it's like 500,000 women of color, and we're the only company there talking about what we're doing. And so we're intentional about how we talk to this community and where we go to talk to them.
Yeah. Leslie, how about you? Anything in your business? Very different business.
Yeah, so for me, I think about myself when I was younger. I mentioned that I was a terrible student. But the reality is I never saw people that looked like me doing the things like what I'm doing today. So for me, it's become very important for, like, I go back to St. Martin and we work with this organization called Arch Saves Lives. Dale and I do some stuff there together. And we work with these youngsters to show them, you know, we have artists that are coming from all over the world to teach them about art and dance and so on. I go in there to talk about social media and how we can use it to build businesses and how we can think like entrepreneurs and how, you know, I remember being in St. Martin and having someone come up to me and saying, "Man, just seeing someone that looks like me that is out there creating this content, teaching about biology, showing me that biology can be fun and it can be interesting and it can be cool, makes me want to do something." For me, that is what it's all about. So if I can work with different organizations to do this, to show someone that looks like me, that maybe is from where I came from, that they too can create, and they can study, and they can get excited about the geeky stuff like biology or engineering or whatever the case might be, whatever they're passionate about. If I can show them that they can do that as well, that for me is worth it. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff.
Dara, you talked a lot about how the some of the risk factors are disproportionate in the Black community, and it's personal to you. What about in your business, maybe going to the brand building side? You know, are you... You have diversity in your dancers and everything. Dancers is probably the wrong word. Sorry. Is there a way that you promote it, you know, specifically, or how do you think about that?
Yeah. So we, Black women, are three times more likely to die of pregnancy complications in America. So just to take a step back, across all races in America, the maternal mortality rate is rising, and the infant mortality rate is rising across all races. But it's felt more acutely in the Black community. So Black women have the most to gain from prenatal fitness. One of the things that we saw is that the biggest brands, fitness brands, completely ignored this market. So we made it a point. We have the most diverse maternal fitness platform. We even have diversity of gender, body type, mobility, ability, language. And I could almost venture to say we might have the most diverse fitness platform, period, not just catering towards this, catering towards this market. So what we're finding is that the fitness community in general has been very narrow. It's been very normative of one body type. And I think that's part of the reason why we don't have as many people exercising as we could. I mean, this is important for any group. But for pregnant women, this is the only demo where if you work out, you're not just benefiting yourself, but someone else.
Yeah. That's really interesting. All right, let's switch gears now. We're at Google. Let's start talking about technology. Maybe we'll stick with you for a second. Technology is at the heart of your business, your platform, your distribution. How do you think about, is technology part of your strategy? Do you think of yourself as a technology company? Like, how do you think?
Absolutely. Our entire strategy is a data-driven strategy, and so much of that is built on Google. And taking a page from Netflix, which if you follow the history of Netflix, Netflix licensed content in its earlier years and gleaned from what performed well in their licensed content to help determine what they would invest in when it was time for them to create original content. And that's what yielded hits like House of Cards. So we did the same thing. Before we made the big investment of shooting a bunch of original fitness content, we actually curated and went through the licensing process of pulling the best prenatal fitness content from YouTube. And we learned from that, and it was an inexpensive way for us to learn what our doctors would deem safe and unsafe to perform in pregnancy and what would resonate with users. So when we went in to produce original content, we had already mitigated a lot of the risks around safety and engagement. And we use Google Cloud Platform, Google Analytics. All of that helped underpin that. And then now, I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but we did our first direct-to-consumer campaign. We found that there were certain types of content that were delivering better click-through rates when we did a Google search campaign, and we're now doubling down on that content. So it's this innovative process, iterative process, and it's all based on data-driven development.
We'll come back to the marketing part in a little bit later. Leslie, moving to you. So your primary outlet is your YouTube channel, yeah?
That's correct.
So how do you think about technology, the tech distribution side versus the content biology side? How do you think about that for your
business? Yeah, so for me, I create my videos, I put them on YouTube, then I take them from YouTube, I put them on my blog, but then I will cut things up and I will share them on other social platforms. So I might post some Instagram reels or on TikTok and so on. And basically use all of these different channels to promote all of these different channels. A big part for me also is building my email list. Mm. So I use that to get people to come over to my email list. And then I can use my email list to get people to the videos and so on. So I'm basically looking at it like, how can I use all of these technology platforms to bring more visibility to my content, to reach more people, to educate more people, so that it doesn't matter where you are, you can consume that content, you can learn, you can engage, and you can have fun.
Yeah. Cool. Let's move now to ads. We're in the ads building here. Have there been key moments for all of you where ads have played a major part in building your audience and your brand? And, you know, Kareem, your business is taking off. It's not a technology business, obviously. As I understand it, you do quite a bit of marketing with Amazon, and then maybe Google has not worked as well for you. What can you tell us about your advertising journey? What's worked, what's not?
Yeah, well, that's an unfortunate truth.
Yeah, tell us.
I'm a Google guy. I was using Google when you actually had another choice about search for a search engine. I had Google Music, you know, my iPad has Google Chrome as the default. So it's all Google for me. However, in my business, when I'm trying to sell products, and you're correct, so majority of my business is retail, but about 30% of it is through Amazon and like platforms. And within, you know, Amazon or even, so the majority of my marketing budget that's going towards ads is going towards Amazon, right? Because I can see the direct correlation between ad spend and results. So if I do, you know, for instance, $4 million on Amazon, and I know I spent, you know, $1 million this year, and then I spent $500,000 the year before, and I can see that it doubled, I can see the exact results, right? And so given that that was the issue, however, I have a major business in Costco and other retailers. And so, you know, I had to assume that Google would be what I would use for that type of, for that retailer. And my experience was I was approached by a group within Google, and they wanted to charge me, you know, $250,000 to do it. And
to,
you know,
to do what?
To run some campaigns.
Huh.
And I said, well, what are going to be, show me some results. You know, that's a major investment for a small company. And they said, well, take our word for it. You know, and I said, well, these investors, you know, they invest in me because that's the kind of thing I don't do. It's to take people's word for it. And so, you know, and it's unfortunate because I know that, you know, when I look at my competitors, you know, they're major companies that are spending tens of millions of dollars with both Google and Amazon. And so it works, right? But I just couldn't be convinced. There was no way to show me how it would work, how my investment here would lead to people leaving their homes and going into a store to buy the products.
Well, I'm sorry that happened. I'm sure there are some people watching who would love to try to help you out again. What about any other marketing platforms that you're using? Facebook, TikTok?
Yeah, so I do use, I use Instagram and Facebook. So I use Meta, right? Because I can geo-target the audience. I know that I'm in 7 states in Costco, and I can geo-target the demographic to send people in that city to that store in that zip code. So I do use social media in that way. The good news is we are about to launch some ready-to-drink products and some products directly from the website, and so more of a direct-to-consumer play there, and I'm sure that Google will be very, very necessary at that point, and I'll be able to see those kind of results. But right now, it's been social media.
All right, we'll talk to you about YouTube ads later. Dra, how about you? Tell us about your experience with your McKinsey. You
had absolutely.
Bespoke help there, and what's been working for you?
Yes, so based on our traction and the impact that maternal fitness can make, McKinsey, the great McKinsey & Company, selected our startup Expect as one of 3 startups that they would provide pro bono hands-on consulting. And so anyone who's ever worked with McKinsey, you know how expensive they are. So we were extremely grateful for that. And when we came into the McKinsey engagement, we had just graduated from Techstars Healthcare, where we had our demo day actually at Spruce Goose. So that was my first time speaking on a Google stage. we came in with a B2B2C model, which is partnering with health insurers, employers, to offer Expect to the women they serve, because prenatal and postnatal fitness is proven to reduce all the major complications, as we mentioned, premature births, gestational diabetes, hypertension in pregnancy, postpartum depression, and do so significantly. And it reduces healthcare costs and improves recovery time. And so partnering with health insurers, employers, hopefully like Google, hint, hint, I would love to talk to someone here about this. And McKinsey said, on top of that, you have a huge direct-to-consumer opportunity as well. And they said, look, we believe in this so much, we are going to dedicate a team to set up your first direct-to-consumer campaign. And we ran a series of still and video ads through Google and Meta. So we did it. We did UAC Google, and Google Search and Meta. And the goal of this campaign was to determine what messages, what content, and what platforms, and what spending mix. And the big headline is that McKinsey came back to us and said, you should spend 70% of your advertising budget with Google. And we believe that the differentiating factor between Google and Meta, and thank you so much to Dale Alsop, because it was all because of him, Dale Alsop, the ads product responsibility officer, is we had help from Google's small business advisors. And so even though we had McKinsey on our side, we still had some issues with data flow and attributing the metrics. And that team really helped us walk through that. And we never had that with Meta. And there were some problems that never got resolved with Meta, I mean, to this day. So it was this engagement we had with McKinsey, bringing Google and Dale facilitating this relationship with the small business advisors that delivered so much value and really put Google ahead. And so we're fans.
Nice. We'll ask you for some feedback later. Leslie, two angles for you. You've used various ad networks to monetize your website for mm-hmm. you, but I also want to talk about ads to get audience for you. So to start with the ad network side, I guess you used to use AdSense, do some direct monetization, so much now. What's that?
Yeah, so actually I use AdSense, obviously, on YouTube so that I can run ads
within YouTube.
Yeah. Within YouTube. But then I also, at some point, I decided, you know what, I'm going to experiment with ads on my site. And I had Google AdSense on my site, and that it went okay. I was making some money. But at a certain point, I had another company reached out to me and say, hey, we think you can make significantly more. Because you know, when I started, the growth of my site was kind of interesting. The first month, I got about 400 people there. The second month, 800. The third month, 12. And then it went from 2,000 to then I had hundreds of thousands of people visiting my site in a month. So based on the traffic that I was getting, they looked at what I was doing with Google AdSense and said, hey, we can probably make you some more money.
Okay.
So I swapped it out with Monumetric at the time. And sure enough, I made significantly more money with it. Eventually, I decided that, you know, I'd go to my site and I would be frustrated because I want to watch a video, but I got to watch this ad. I got to try to avoid this pop-up and so on. At a certain point, I decided, you know what? When people come to my site, they're coming for biology content. I want to keep them here. So I made the decision to remove ads from my site completely and just keep the ads on YouTube. So that's how my involvement with AdSense has been so far.
And if people watch your videos on your site, they will still see the YouTube ad, though?
Yes, they will.
So you're going to get that monetization.
Yes, and it's not that inconvenient, and people are used to watching ads on YouTube, and I think it's done well enough that we've gotten used to this process.
What about on the acquisition side? Are you doing any paid marketing to build your audience?
For myself, right now, no. I do work with different clients that I help build their businesses. Like I have one client right now that is also sell physical products, and we use primarily Amazon, secondarily Facebook, some Meta ads to drive traffic. Amazon ads are directly on Amazon, but then to her website, which is a Shopify store, we use Facebook ads for that.
Got it. Cool. So I think we're going to have some questions from the audience. One more question from me, though. You've got a lot of people working at Google who are listening to you guys right now. What can we do better to serve you, to serve businesses like you? You know, don't hold back. Big, shoot for the moon, or small, annoying things. You know, what can you guys tell us? Maybe Kareem?
Well, you know, I hate to keep mentioning Amazon, but one of the things they did do, and I'll be honest.
We have thick skin, Google, don't worry.
No, actually, Google had a program with Tuck, and I attended that many, many years ago, and that was really, really good. I don't know if they continue to do that. And it was for African American small businesses. Amazon does something too. They do, where they went further than Google is the same thing. They work with some small African American businesses, bring everyone to Seattle, give you a day and a half of training. Google program was a 5-day, it was a whole week program.
Oh, wow.
However, following 6 months, they have free counseling and sort of the small business mentoring and walking you through setting up your pages, creating the pages, help you create the content. They go a little bit further. But I will say that, so Google does have a history of trying to do this. I think they could do it a little better. And right now, you know, and that was before my business got to the point that it is now. Now it would be awesome to have that kind of resource from Google and how to really go to the next level. And so that'd be my recommendation.
Okay. Dara?
We had the benefit, the amazing fortune of having an entire team at McKinsey to help us through that process, and we still needed Google's help. But for the 99.9% of startups that don't have McKinsey working with them, I think where Google could step in and fill that gap is McKinsey really, when we set out to do this campaign, this direct to consumer campaign, they said, these are the types of assets you need. The video assets should be this length. You need to test this number of messages for this to make any sense. You should run it over this period of time. And it was very, it was super specific and creative. And I think that's where Google could step in, and because we know that Google has a lot of information about what works, what doesn't work, even creatively, not just operationally. So that would be fantastic.
Sounds like there's a theme here that we're just making it hard and helping you in various ways with people, with best practices, within the technology. Okay, hear it loud and clear. What about you, Lazier, a YouTube power user?
So you're saying if I could have anything from Google?
Anything from Google.
Ah, man. I feel like the sky's the limit there.
It is.
All right. Let me pull up my list.
No. Yeah.
So I think what is very important is representation. I want my kids to go on YouTube, for example, and see people like them doing things that they never thought they could do. I wish that when I was younger, I saw more examples of black biologists, engineers, and from varied backgrounds, in varied fields. I think if we can find more ways to highlight people of color that are doing amazing things, because there are many out there, if we can find more ways to feature those people, that goes a long way, because when I see someone that looks like me doing it, now I believe that I can do it as well. And anything that Google can do to facilitate that process, I think that's great. I went to a YouTube event for people of color, and it was a great event. But it was very focused on, you know, arts and hip-hop and that type of culture, which nothing is wrong with that. But it would be awesome to see that in science. It would be awesome to see that in technology. It would be awesome to see that in all of these different fields, so that more people that look like me can see that and say, if they can do it, I can do it too.
Very good. How are we doing on questions from the crowd? I think we have a mic here, the limited people in the room. feel free to ask as well. Okay. Can we see them? Oh, here we go. All right. What has been the most important lesson you've learned from being an entrepreneur? Just jump in.
I'm happy to start. I would say that the most important lesson I learned is that there are a few things you will do, you can do in business that will result in your death. and by that, I mean, you know, be bold. You know, think of the boldest thing you could do in the most important moments and do that, because you're not going to die, right? And what I've learned is, and I was afraid, like every entrepreneur deals with fear. But it's been the single most important reason why I'm as successful as I am, whatever that level is. And, you know, an example of that is being in the CEO's office at Costco and being asked and telling the CEO directly that you guys practice what we call systemic bias. And that's why you don't have minority vendors at Costco. And yeah, it was an embarrassing moment, but he was like, well, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, you have a mandate that you don't want to be more than 20% of a company's revenue, right? But the average SKU in my space does $50 million per year. How many black-owned companies do you think are out there, $200, $250 million in sales, they can qualify to be in Costco? Zero. You'll never have a black-owned company. And it's because of the good people in this room who said they want diversity have the power to change that. And he did. He said, well, I'll give you 5 stores. Next day, that turned to 40. And you know, right now it's 114.
And have they changed their policy more broadly as a result of that, do you know?
Well, we're an example, right? And so we're sort of the first ones through. I mean, there are other companies that have been there, but we're the first ones who they said, we're going to give them a chance that we normally don't give companies, and we'll see what they can do. And so there's a lot of pressure that comes with that, but had we not done what we did in that moment, that wouldn't have happened, you know?
Any other lessons?
I think for me, one of the lessons that I've learned is that I think my whole life, and I think many people might struggle with this, is I've always struggled with how to bring together these disparate parts of my life and disparate interests. I was always someone who was very quantitative, very much into math, but I also had this very strong creative side. I didn't really know how to bring it together. And in traditional media, there's this separation of church and state. You have to pick a side. You have to go to one. At one point, I was also thinking about getting a PhD in economics. And I was at Stanford, not too far from here, studying to potentially get this PhD in economics. And I still had this this streak where I wanted to pursue that side of things as well. And starting my own company has finally allowed me to bring everything together. So we take this data-driven approach to development. We still create amazing content. And now it's full circle with Stanford because I'm a visiting entrepreneur at Stanford GSB within their Center for Social Innovation. So this is, I think there's some things that you can do that allow you to fully express all of who you are. And I think if anyone, I mean, this is probably an odd thing to say within a company, but if anyone is, if you really think that this is something that you might want to do, this is the one thing in my life where I said, I finally get to play the instrument. It's almost like Prince. It's like, I finally get to play the instrument, sing the songs, you know, do Purple Rain, all of the things that I can do, I get to do them. And some of the things that may even seem that they clash and are disparate, but this is the way that we can achieve these things and make a social impact at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a lesson, Leslie? No pressure to answer every question.
But. Yeah, no, I love this question. For me, the most important lesson I've learned from being an entrepreneur is that the most important work that I can do is work on myself. And when I say, I didn't even know entrepreneurship was a thing, honestly, growing up. It wasn't a thing that I saw myself doing. But then I started getting into it, and I started realizing that there are a lot of things in myself that was holding me back. So the question is, how do I overcome that? Well, I started to study. I started to read. I started to listen to audiobooks. I started to spend time focusing on my health and fitness. I started spending more time focusing on my personal life, my spiritual life, and these different aspects of myself. And what I found is that as I started growing, my business started growing. As I continued focusing on my mind and my mind started expanding, my business started expanding. The people that I started reaching started expanding. So that's the biggest thing that I've learned. If I can focus on growing myself, all of the other aspects of my life, including my business, will also grow.
Love that. Great point. Cool. Let's go to the next one. So timing is almost never perfect. Was there a particular moment or event in your life that led you to start your business? Some of you touched on this already, but any like aha moment there to talk about?
So for me, something just jumped in my mind when I saw that question. I said entrepreneurship was never really a thing in my mind before. And when I was in college, someone recommended a book to me, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. I remember reading that book and being like, what? People live like this? Like, what is this about? And that just, first of all, it blew my mind. And then it put me in a situation where, just like when I found out about in biology, this neuron and how amazing it was, I wanted to learn as much as possible about it. The same thing happened to me. I was like, wait, no, this entrepreneurship and this investing stuff sounds really interesting. I need to learn more about this. And so that book led to the next book, which led to the next book, which led to the next book. And that's what led me to finally start a business.
What about you, Kareem? You talked about the kind of the impetus for the business, but what actually made you think about going to do something about it?
Well, I have two answers. What made me want to do something was just the people in my family of a certain generation all die from the same thing. And as a kid, I remember going into the refrigerator and seeing insulin bottles and people sticking themselves and diabetes. And it's just, you just accept it. You know, I had four relatives die during COVID, and it was because they were either obese or they had diabetes, right? And so, but it's not a death sentence. It's not something that has to happen. And so that's why we wanted to do the type of business that we did. Now, my second answer is, and this is probably also the silliest thing you'll hear today, but what made my mind, what made me have the entrepreneurial spirit was, in between my first and second year of business school, and I went to Duke Fuqua School of Business, my internship was at Disney World. And before getting to Disney World, we received this book called The Disney Look. And on page 6 of what you could, and actually had illustrations of what you could look like and what you couldn't look like, it was a picture of me, basically. Cannot look like him. And what was the situation? You couldn't have facial hair.
Right.
And I think I was 27.
They still have that rule, right?
Excuse me?
Don't they still have that rule?
No, they didn't. I may have played a small part in that. but they had a picture of me. And I mean, a person with a goatee. And I was like, oh, man, I haven't cut off my facial hair over a decade. So I get there and I'm being a good employee and I'm shaving Monday and I'm shaving Tuesday, shaving Wednesday, and Thursday I wake up and I'm not shaving. You know, Friday I don't shave and hopefully no one notices. And I get home and I'm like, all right, let me shape up my goatee. And you know, it gets darker on Friday and Sunday is perfect. And Monday I have to cut it all off again. I said, this is the most ridiculous routine I've ever participated in life. And I just thought about it. I was like, man, the fact that someone can control me to this level, you know, and it's a small thing, but what it did was get my mind thinking about a place where I could control the rules and I could control all the things about life that make me happy as a person. And you won't really ever get that until you're your own boss.
Gerard, did you go directly from MTV to for business?
I did. So I had started it on the side when I was still at MTV, okay. And I was trying things. I was just trying to get cues that this was something that made sense. I went back. I said, look, I have this idea to do a pre and postnatal fitness platform that's OBGYN approved. I went to Wharton undergrad, and they had a pitch competition. I just said, let me see if this has any legs. I'm going to pitch it. And won funding. So I said, okay, maybe there's something here. And kept going. And then I went to HBS, and they have this strategy competition. It's sort of like March Madness. Won that for Expect. I said, well, maybe there's something here. Now, I was still at MTV at the time. And there was something happening. I would say anyone who works at MTV at the time, they're going to say something about this. But there was something. We had started what has now become a clinical study with the University of Alabama at Birmingham, which is the number 5 OBGYN department in America. And the woman who runs, there's an exercise and pregnancy clinic there. And she called me. First time we're talking on the phone, and we're talking about the high death rate of women in pregnancy in Alabama. And we're talking about saving lives and how prenatal fitness is one of the few things that we can do to make an impact. And at this point, my boss is calling me, and he's the CEO of MTV Entertainment, which is not just MTV, it was MTV, Comedy Central, half a Nickelodeon, everything unscripted under Paramount Plus. So big job. And he's calling me. And I declined it. Mm. And that's when I realized, I was like, I have to go. So, just this conversation about the impact that we could make and how dire the situation is. And and the doctor at UAB, she was saying, it is all hands on deck now. She was like, I mean, so many women are dying. So many women are having preventable complications. We need this solution. So at that point, as soon as I got my bonus, I left. I'm being very honest. It was the day after. Yeah. But my boss, I love him. He's fantastic, and he was very supportive.
Well, I'm going to take the live question before finishing the Dory.
It's already on. Hello. Thank you guys again for coming today. My question is, you guys all spoke a little earlier about leaning into cultural intelligence. Can you elaborate on who were your role models when you're thinking about that impact?
Well, I can tell you, you may or may not know who this woman is, but my role model and my mentor was a woman named Janet Hill, who is Grant Hill's mom. Grant Hill was my classmate at Duke, also one of my business partners in the company, along with Magic Johnson and Claude Tellis. And she taught me the difference between being a mentor and being a sponsor. Because even as his friend, she gave me advice when we were in college. She helped me get every single internship I ever had. But the reason that she went beyond and she was a sponsor was because she spoke about me and made moves on my behalf when I wasn't in the room. And that's what a sponsor does, right? A mentor will meet with you, you know, they'll help you out of anything you ask them. But a sponsor thinks about you when you're not there and they're moving on your behalf. And some of my investors to this day are people that she made introductions to. She was on the trustee board at Duke University as well as the business school. And said, you know, these are things you should aspire to. And currently I'm on the board for the business school. And she would invite me to these meetings. And, you know, I mean, even if I wasn't qualified, I remember she was on some board and the Arizona Diamondbacks, just they were founded baseball team. I know Dale's Major League Baseball guru here. And she was like, Kareem, they're looking for an accounts payable person to run accounting. And I'm like, I don't know anything about accounting. She's like, well, you get out there and learn it, right? But, I mean, she was an amazing person. And the way I treat the people coming behind me is in large part by how I saw her treat the people that was coming up behind her.
In terms of the role model piece, someone a long time ago said that you should have mentors and role models who were younger than you. And I thought that was fascinating. And my my co-founder, Joey, I learned so much from him. He's a lot younger than me, too. He built the platform, and he's an absolute genius. I think in a lot of ways, my niece, who was born in that 15-minute labor, I was in the room for that. It was so fast. She is in a lot of ways a role model, and that keeps me motivated. One thing that we know about maternal fitness is that babies really benefit. So if you exercise in pregnancy, your babies have better brain development, higher IQs, better motor skills, lower rates of diabetes and obesity into their adulthood. It really inoculates children against cardiovascular disease in the womb. It is one of the most elegant and simple to execute interventions. And even just at one point in the pandemic, we all lived under one roof. That's a whole other story. And me exercising at home with, and she was like three. And if you've ever tried to exercise with a toddler, they... They're involved
they get in
and
the way.
They're interfering. I mean, I'd be doing a push-up. She's sitting on my back.
It's the best.
Right. It's the best thing. So that has inspired us. We're now starting to use AI animation to create content, workout content to bring our audience past postnatal into mommy and me, parent and me, so that there's so the kids can be involved and work out with you and not against you, and also reinforce numeracy, because when I was with my niece, you know, she's three, and all working out is counting. You're either counting reps or you're counting time. Mm. So I would just say, come on, now we're going to count to 30. We're going to do this for 60 seconds. We're going to do this for 100. And I think it was helpful. So I think so much of what I've learned from babies and toddlers.
Love that. Leslie, any role model for you?
Yeah, so ever since you asked the question, I'm thinking in my mind, who have been my role models and mentors and so on? And it's bothered me because I think to myself, the people that have been my role models or have guided me in this process, they quite frankly, they don't look like me. And that's not, I don't think that's a problem. But what it's done for me is I think now personally about my son and my daughter, my niece, my nephew, and how I can be that person for them. And that has more than motivated me. Like, quite frankly, I could live on like next to nothing personally. I've done it before and I've been very happy and content. Part of my drive to do what I do and to accomplish what I want to accomplish is because I want to be that mentor for those people that are coming behind me. Yeah, that's what came to mind on that.
Love that. I think that's a good place to end or right at time. Thank you so much for joining us, all three of you. It was a delightful conversation, and I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.